Scott Running are still hammering their super great special at the moment on the fantastic Pursuit Road Shoe. Get yourself a pair for $99. And if you're after something a bit more trail, check out the Kinabalu 2, also on sale for $99. Both these shoes are epic, and the K2 has the best colorway of any Scott shoe going, in my not so humble opinion. Check out these shoes and more at scottrunning.nz. I've been raving about the Ultra Spire Big Bronco for a few months now. I managed to pick myself up one of these, and it is, again, in my humble opinion, one of the best Ultra Spire packs I've ever worn. It has enough space for all the gear. It fits tight to your body. It breathes well. The bottles are secure. You can fit everything in, and most excellently, there's very few zips to corrode, get stuck, get wet. Head over to ultraspire.nz to check out the Big Bronco race vest. It's epic. Wild Things, the New Zealand trail institution. VIP discounts are now, they used to be free months. You put the code DCR2023 and you get a couple of free months. But now, if you want to become a VIP at Wild Things, you get shop credit. So any new VIP member gets $20 credit to drop in the Wild Things store, and they get the VIP discount with that too. Trail directory, community, amazing resource, wildthings.club. Sam Harvey, he's been on the show a couple of times. He's been building up to the big backyard, and as I speak, he's a couple of hundred Ks deep into the Big's backyard, which is the world champs of the backyard format. He's using Currens to aid in his recovery and keep the inflammation at bay. And if you head to currens.co.nz to read up on the science behind these wondrous little purple capsules, you'll get 20% off your first order of Currens 30 with the code DIRTCHURCH. Support local, support Currens, and as always, reject the black currant industrial complex.
It goes something like further, faster, there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jacob is delicious. Go to further, faster now.
Oh, further, faster, there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jacob is delicious. Go to further, faster now.
DIRTCHURCH Radio.
Episode 254 of the DIRTCHURCH Radio Trail and Ultra Running Podcast. I'm Matt Raymond.
And I am Eugene Bingham. Tēnā koutou katoa. No mai, hoki mai. Excuse the explosions in the background. We are recording on Guy Fawkes, who decided that was a good idea. In fact, we didn't really think about it, did we?
It didn't factor into the equation at all. I bet from us to Guy Fawkes, especially at the end, the questioning life choices. But it's a small, it's a small inconvenience. Excited to be here with you, brother. And we
indeed. I'm missing. I mean, I think I've enjoyed our Forest Car Park recordings, even though maybe the sound was a bit of an issue. But anyway, so we're not doing that this week. But we got out on a couple of big training missions for the two of us this weekend. It's been a step towards our old ghost ultra goal in February.
Absolutely, very exciting. And I'm excited too, because I've got another goal coming up in the it's good to talk about doing the 24-hour solo relay at Rage Against Riverhead. Super grassroots,
coming up very soon.
Yeah, a couple of weeks. Felt so good after Blue Lake. Woke up a real fire inside me, and I thought, and ties in with the guest that we have tonight, I have this time, I have this ability, I need to use it. So looking really forward to that, for whatever that brings. But I just want to say sorry to the Manawa too, because I spent some...
Did you cop any shade?
No, none at all. None. None of them can write. I spent...
I don't know this guy. I've never met him before. If you see me running with him in the forest, it's just complete coincidence. I don't know who he is. Munchie, you were born there or something. I take that back. Help.
No. But can I just provide some context?
Yes, please do.
So as proud, you know, dwellers of Tamaki Makaurau, Aucklanders, we cop a lot of shit from the rest of the country. And for those listening overseas, sorry, but it is an actual thing. There's actually a delightful acronym named a Jaffa, which is a type of confectionery, and it stands for something else. So any chance I get to punch out of the provinces, I will do that. But I spent a couple of the best years of my life in the Manawatū. Lived in Milson, went to St. Mary's Primary, loved it, and had the opportunity to go back there recently. Did a flight nurse gig into it. Super impressed by the hospital, and yeah. So no, of course they can read, and I don't really want to put a fence up about it. But
no. Hey, I just wanted to quickly say I was out at Huia on the trails yesterday. Bumped into so many people. So many people were out there taking on the hills, including one poor guy who about a quarter of the way. You know those steps at the start there when you're just climbing. He was about a quarter of the way up and he stops, hands on knees, and he says to me, "Am I nearly at the top?"
Sir, you are not.
I didn't know. I was just like, how do I put this gently? No, you're not. But yeah, heaps of people out there, and it was good to see so many people getting out and enjoying the trails on a good weekend. Right, we caught up with a Riverhead royalty this week.
Yes, I mean, Scott Bougen, this man's story is incredible, and it speaks for itself. He, in a very short space of time, he's gone from someone who, an enthusiastic amateur volunteering at trail races, to ascending the heights, you know, and you know, ending up on the Innovate team as an elite at UTMB. We go through this. We go through his start, some very the challenges he's had, and the fact that he's accomplished all of this, as well as being the representing New Zealand at the backyard format and becoming the assist there. This is an incredible story with a guy who's got so much more to give, and actually having quite a lot to do with the man, so much more to give to the community, which is a real focus for him. This is a fantastic yarn that we just wrapped up, and we can't wait for you to hear it.
We cannot, but first we should do this.
Greatest run ever, which is the part of the show where we ask you to write into us and tell us your greatest run ever. It doesn't have to be a race or a mountain summit. Might just be a run around the block. Something that sung to you for some reason. Send it in to us at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com. And I feel a certain amount of responsibility for this next greatest run ever, because I had the pleasure of sharing several laps of the Blue Lake with this man, Kendall Peacock. And he writes in, "Why is this my greatest run ever? Collectively, 24 hours of Blue Lake, it ticked all the boxes. Great people, challenging distance, challenging weather. Off the bat, I didn't make any distance goals as I was stopped by the course closure. That is what it is. This challenge started for me 12 months ago when I turned up to Blue Lake 22, waiting for ankle surgery the following week. Against my wife's direction, I hacked out 8 laps with a few friends and then stopped at last light before I hurt myself and had some explaining to do. So throughout the year, I was dragging people into my crazy plan, and we had a crew from Waipukoto of 9. We trained together on Sundays and really built this cool little running group. We arrived at Blue Lake on midday Friday, and the weather looked far better than expected. Tent site sorted and helped with the fabulous people with some setup. My wife was crewing me and was a little bit stressed, more worried about getting me through than anything else. But we were early to bed and up before the Christmas music started." So for those who don't know, they start playing Christmas music between 5 and 6 in the morning.
Yeah, we talked about it.
I know, it's worth repeating. Okay. Quick bacon and eggs on the barbecue, and then round the tents to say hi to the friends I made the year before and chat with some legends of the lake. Just before the start, rain started to come down and already the grass was getting muddy. And then a year of planning was done and we were off. A slow lap to start, bumped into some amazing people and chatted along, staying patient with all my markers for the loop logged into my brain. What's awesome when trail running is the discussions about resilience, life balance, training, mental health, and learning the life stories of people you've just met on the trail. Lap one done, nutrition take on board, plan was in place and working. So great seeing all our running friends out there working hard and fighting to achieve goals. We had some aiming for 60K, 400K, and some just waiting to move on for 24 hours, and that was going to be really hard. The trail started to get muddy, slippery, technical, and challenging. The rain would come in waves, the wind would chill you on the road section, and just be noise in the bush. I think we all knew the real bad weather was on its way, and still people kept running. So inspiring to see the diversity on course. A few speedies, but the main people were just trucking through. Then, shit got real. I just wanted to sleep. 70-odd K, still daylight, and the wheels just didn't fall off. They went missing. Into the tent and down onto the chair, which was the only time on that run, and I wanted to quit. All the hard work to get there, and I just didn't care. I was tired. I wanted to sleep, just curl up and close my eyes. Thanks to Nat, that wasn't going to happen. Changed shoes and socks, new top, didn't want to move. 10 minutes gone, and Nat came into her own and got me up and pushed me out of the station and down the very muddy alley. I walked. I hit the lap where I always did at the tailwind tent, and the lap of the race began. I walked. I wanted to sleep. In fact, I wasn't even walking. I was stumbling. It was still daylight. What was going on? I'm done. Turn around. Made it to the road. The step down hurt. On the tarmac, I was thinking if I had my phone, I could get Nat to pick me up. Walking spectators give me ups. Running, going past, telling me I'm doing okay. Is that a bench? I could just sit down. Past the top 10, holiday park. Okay, just walk this lap, then quit. Others that I'd run with were going past. Well done, Kendall. Keep pushing. Still on the road section, I tried to run the downhill. Nope, that's no good. Back to walking. Off the road section and managed to run. Okay, this is good to make it to the route section and walk to the top of the stairs. Stairs done and 200 meters past the gate, I started to plod. By the time I hit the clearing, I was back. Bombed the downhill, back into camp with a 50-minute lap, which became important later, I might add. I was back. 13 laps done, in and out in under 30 seconds, and we were on track. Dark came, change of top, windbreaker on, temperature management in progress. Out on lap 20 now, with thought of only 7 after this, I calculate that will I finish lap 20, which was in 15 and a half hours. Did some math, checked it a few times, 72-minute laps required. Hey, my bad lap with a big slow walk was 50 minutes. I'd run the second half hard, but now settled into a really consistent pace, knowing where to walk and run, walk the routes and stairs, plod up the climb, avoid the rocks after the clearing, check lap time at the pallets, and manage the lap from there. I've got this. Running up the hill into the tent for more, the small group of hardy souls at the tent, wet, smiling, psyched. Then I saw my wife, a tear in her eye. Is she pulling me? Really? I look over at the staff and I knew straight away what was happening. The weather had started to get real bad. The course was like a river. The wind was up and it was only going to get worse. I could handle that. Been in worse for longer. Been cold, wet and tired for days in my past life. Anyway, that's your last lap. Mark it up. The course is closed. I wanted to argue, but I know it was the right call. There were people out there who were struggling. So I marked lap 20 and I knew I hadn't quit. I knew, even though 7 more laps to go and a lot could go wrong, that I had this. That's the end. 15 hours, 22 minutes, job done. The running beast was at the finish line waiting for his daughter. A few wise words from him, some chats with other buckle chasers giving high fives. I was now getting really cold. My wife looked worse. So much emotion. What I thought was the best, though, was that no one questioned the decision. It was the right one. So that's a DNF without quitting. So much went right. I had so much fun. The people were awesome. The collective will to succeed was inspiring. Sometimes it's not winning the fight that's important. It's just being in the fight that what matters. Greatest run ever for now.
Wow, Kendall. What a epic greatest run ever. And, you know, you bore witness to it, didn't you, Matt?
Well, I did. I happened to run most of the first lap with Kendall. And, I mean, he is an effervescent human being, talked the iron legs off a stove. And I mustn't have seen that slow lap because he passed me in the dark going like he was being chased by something. He was just getting after it. So, yeah, that was amazing. Thanks, bro.
Well done, Kendall. Yeah, thank you. And thank you for sending that in. It's, you know, it's a big effort to sit down and write that, you know, reliving it. Hope you got some, you know, that was a bit of PTSD probably from writing that all out. So really appreciate it. Brilliant. The rest of you keep sending them in to us, stirtchurchradio@gmail.com. Right.
On to our chat. Scott Bougen. He's a legend. Incredible story from enthusiastic amateur to elite at UTMB. And, I mean, what a human being.
set the record for all-time longest yarn on DCR, and well worth it. So please enjoy.
Dirt Church Radio.
Scott Balgin, welcome to Dirt Church Radio. It's amazing to have you on, man. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, guys. Yeah, no, it's, I really appreciate the invite to come onto the big DCR. It's amazing.
Full disclosure, we've known each other for
quite some time. We put on a very grassroots registered not-for-profit charity race together. Which you volunteered at the start. So we do have a history together, but for the longest time, Eugene and I wanted to have you on because it seems like at early middle age, you've just kicked off in terms of running.
Yeah, look, it's a hard one to actually kind of comprehend on my end, really. It's I never really thought at this stage in my life that I'd be doing what I'm doing, you know. But I don't know, just but the love for it, you know, it's kind of spiraled out of control. You get that taste of a little bit of achievement and it just drives that hunger, drives that flame, you know, and it just keeps burning. So the volunteering, I hugely enjoy, like hugely love putting that race on with you guys. And, that's just the enjoyment seeing it out in other people's eyes, you know, any walk of life, you know. So, yeah, it's amazing.
The first time that I ever even heard of you, I'd not met you, was with Riverhead Rampage, and Rebecca came running back to the start and went, "Oh my God, Matt, there's a guy standing at the top of the forest and he's got a bucket hat just like yours."
Yeah.
And he seems really excited to be there, and that was you. You volunteered and gone to the top of, you know, the trail, which has now been felled, was called Gucci, and you stood there for hours and hours and marshaled people in and out of the forest. That was the first time we sort of...
Yeah, you know, well, I think the year we'd sort of moved into Riverhead, you know, and I'd had a taste of trail running and just in general, but it's, I think the first year we lived there, I saw everyone running past, you know, so, and I was like, oh, that's, you know, that's Riverhead Rampage. So I kind of had that taste and I thought, man, like, it'd just be cool to, whether I'm running it or not, you know, it'd be cool to be part of it. You know, it's local, it's for a good cause. And it's kind of like, oh, well, yeah. And it was a big thing for me to put myself out there too. And you know, as a semi probably introvert, I just was like, man, I just want to, even if it's just standing on a corner, it was cool to see people and sort of be introduced to that scene.
Get amongst it.
Yeah.
So was it moving to Riverhead that sort of brought you into the scene a bit more? You mentioned you had done a bit of trail running, but what, do you want to walk us through a bit of your
trail running
history, yeah, as it were, before we get to the meaty stuff?
Yeah, well, yeah, I was a big team sport player. Like, I played a lot of soccer in early years, sort of rep football and soccer and that. And
where'd you grow up?
I was born in Whangarei, and then I spent a lot of my years down in a little place called Mangakino or Whakamaru, which is obviously close to Taupō and Tokoro. So I spent till about I was 12 living there. Represented Midland soccer, and then ended up moving back to Whangarei for my sort of last year of intermediate and then high school years. So then playing for Northland and then ended up sort of kind of drifting away from it. I think it was more, everyone was gun-ho at the beginning of seasons and then it sort of would taper off and then sort of play. So kind of I was like, never really kind of took off in terms of that later years of trying to, you know, enjoyment and stuff like that. So then sort of around the sort of 17, I moved back down or moved down to here, moved to Whangaparoa, and then kind of cut my teeth in sort of Shakespeare Regional Park, you know, just doing those little trails. So, and then it just got, yeah, it grew greater and greater. And then, ended up moving to Riverhead. So it was, you know, on the doorstep. And I sort of saw people, obviously, where that Riverhead Rampage goes into the forest, I sort of saw people entering in through that end. And I thought, oh, maybe I'll just explore this, you know, and then just got in there. And, yeah, just kind of, yeah, it was never ending from there.
Yeah. So the period where you were just sort of embarking on those trails at Shakespeare, which are glorious and what a beautiful place to, no wonder you fell in love with trail running, I've got to say. But was there any races at that point? Was that something, or was it just more for fun?
Yeah, I did the Wild Kiwi. It was my first race. So it was quite a rude awakening. Yeah, I wasn't informed about the stairs. So it was a pretty hellish 21K. So, but I loved it. Just, it was a perfect kind of race to start with. The scenery out there is awesome. You know, it was sort of the hometown. And then, yeah, I basically went on from that and did, the Tarawera 100K, as we all do, is jumping from, you know, minimal Ks to, you know, the entering into that 100K mark.
Yeah, and how was that, your first Tarawera?
It was sore. Yeah, it was pretty rough, but loved every minute of it. So I think I came in with 14 hours flat, and it was, yeah, it was just awesome. You know? So
yeah. What year was that?
2019 I did that. Yeah, so that was it was really good. My brother and my partner, April, they were there. They crewed for me, and yeah, it was awesome. And then it just, from there, it's just kind of exponentially grown.
Yeah. So you got introduced to the Riverhead Mafia.
Pretty much. Yeah. 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 And like for a long time, I would run by myself. So it's only probably in the last 2 years, you know, maybe 3 years that it's sort of kind of, you know, got into the circles of our community. And that's even driven even harder, you know.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned love of trail running, and it's, you know, we all kind of feel it in different ways, don't we? But what does that mean for you when you say that? What do you mean?
It's probably the sense of adventure that really kind of grabs me. I've done a lot of, you know, backcountry hunting and stuff like that, and it's the, you know, obviously Riverhead's not remote, but it's still, you're exploring, you know, you know, it's not, yeah, it's just the adventure, kind of like you never know what you're going to, you know, bump into, come across, you know, what's over the next hill, you know, so that's probably what grabs me the most is the adventure. Yeah, it's always, I always look back at those runs or whatever, and it's the ones that are, yeah, there's adventures that really sort of bring it home, eh?
I was talking about that this morning with someone who I was running with, and we were talking about the notion that some places have stories around them. Like if you say Whakarewarewa or Waitakere or Mount – well, I guess Mount Oxford is different because it's actually a mountain, but Riverhead is somewhere that I think – especially pre-COVID, was sort of a poor cousin. You know, not many people, I'll go to the Waita, or pre-Rahui, right? Like with Cody Dieback when the Waitakere Ranges closed, Riverhead was somewhere where you sort of went on your off days, or you went sort of, and it was just, it's not that.
But you're so right about that. Hey, it's such a... The terrain's varied, and sure, there's not massive climbs, but there's lots of pinches, and there's
plenty of technical trails, and certainly if you get a drop of rain in there, it's pretty treacherous.
Yeah, you know, I don't think and there's still the years that I've been running in there, there's still trails that I haven't. I always come across trails that I've never run down before, you know? So obviously we're waiting for that time where it starts drying back up, but the gravel does kind of get a bit monotonous, but even so, there's kind of some beauty in it. You know, the forest always changing. So, you know, even You know, they think of the times that it was, you know, they've done a lot of tree felling lately. But before that, and the difference between obviously when the trees weren't felled to when they're felled, some days you kind of forget where you are, you know. So, it's like you said, it's got everything, you know, you generally want to do. It's on a good day, you know.
It's the Chamonix of the South.
Oh, of course. Yeah, it's so much vert.
It's so interesting, though, when you think about, like, your front door, where you, like, you were literally maybe 50 metres from the trailhead. When I
moved to Riverhead, and by chance our oldest boy became friends with someone whose parents owned the farm that your house was then built on, you know, even in a space of, what was that, 6 years, yeah. I had to climb a farm gate, run down over a paddock, go across a janky bridge, past some caravans that you were hopeful that there was no one in, and then find like a little space in the bush that was
almost identical, right? Like, it's so funny in that short space how things just change of their own.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and I think that kind of ruined me too, that living so close there for us, because when we looked to buy a house, obviously we were renting a Riverhead, but when we looked to buy, I was like, man, I can't move too far away from Riverhead, you know. So, and I think my partner at the time sort of mentioned Tauranga, and I was like, at that time I hadn't explored the Waitak, so I was like, no, definitely not. It can't be anywhere more, you know, less than, you know, 15 minutes or more than 15 minutes away from Riverhead. So, yeah, it's been a good point, you know, a good base. I love calling Riverhead, you know, the home ground anyway.
And I guess, I mean, not making this a love story to Riverhead. I mean, I'm personally quite, and I know Eugene would be quite happy doing that, but talk us through, you know, 2019 to now, you had a competitive upbringing, but like the first time that we really became aware that this was like Scotty, who is obviously fit and obviously can get after it, was that backyard where you banged out 180 kilometers. I mean, what was the lead up to that?
Yeah, it was quite progressive, I guess. Like that was like the third backyard that I'd sort of done at the time. I did the relay the first year that it was on. Had the great intentions of doing the first last person standing, but, you know, due to injury. But I ended up doing a four-man team and loved that, and then knew I was going to come back the following year and do it. And I think I did like 17 laps or something like that. And then just the progression of learning is just so huge. Like, you know, the relapse and the backyards, and it's just like an apprenticeship, right? So you learn so much. And then, yeah, just meet, that was, you know, obviously that's the first miler. And I think a lot of it was the people I met, the people that sort of brung me up with it as well, you know. Like, it was an unknown for me. So I never thought I'd do a sort of, you know, 180K or whatever, but it's, I kind of surprised myself, I guess, in a way. But
what was the difference? What was the thing that you learned to go from that sort of,
probably,
you know, 17 odd laps to make that jump?
It was probably composure, and the more of trusting my mental ability as well. Like, anyone can run. Anyone can sort of chug around at that pace, but I guess I knew I could probably draw on a lot, you know, draw on some mental strength, and then once you do, it's you kind of that confidence, and like it's pretty crazy that you know, carrying that through. I think I think it was that mental side of things that sort of made a big change.
Mm. I mean, that's just so much
of that particular genre of trail running, isn't it?
Oh, huge.
Huge. So where does that come from for you? Where does that come from?
I guess just general life, you know, like life experience. I probably my mother, she's pretty tough. She's been through a lot of shit. So, you know, like if you take it back, my father was killed when she was 6 months pregnant. So, you know, just that sort of thing is, you know, it's and trials and tribulations throughout her life. And I've witnessed that. And we were alone, you know, so it was just her and I for a long time. So I was, I guess, the man of the house. And obviously we had family and stuff, but it was, you know, it that builds resilience, and feeding off what she, you know, nothing was ever a problem. There was always an answer, you know. So I think I bring that, a lot of that comes through from that.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that's, we get strength from places that we're not even aware of at the time, are we? It's not like...
No, 100%.
You know, you're not sitting there going, this is a learning moment, which sounds ridiculous when I say it out loud. But, yeah, it's, you know, be able to look back and recognize your mum like that, that's
yeah, special. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think I draw, like, it's and probably not in that stage, but, when, you know, now it goes, you know, bigger and longer and harder and stuff like that. I draw down on a lot of that stuff, you know, thinking about how, you know, one in particular, like obviously the mum's trials and tribulations, but it's, I'm probably, I've lived twice as long as my father ever did. So, you know, that's kind of, I take that with me as well. Grandfather was probably the father figure in my life. So, and he passed away a few years ago. So it's, that's, you know, it was, you know, just you draw down on those life and those people that have been around you. And then obviously your the people that you look up to and draw down on as well, just in everyday life.
Yeah, the pain cave is a pretty relative thing, isn't it?
You know, yeah.
You know, yeah. So you, I mean, you, that understanding, going from that 17 yards to making that jump to 180, sort of recognizing that, yeah, you had strengths to draw on, that you had, yeah, that patience. That's another big thing, isn't it, about backyards, is patience.
Yeah, it definitely is. This composure and patience, you know, and yeah, it's huge.
Yeah. So when you, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, finishing with 180K, when that happened, were you blown away? Were you happy? I mean, I guess there's a little bit of disappointment as well, but what was your reaction?
Yeah, it's kind of, it's bittersweet, eh? It's a, obviously you know, you're pretty stoked, but at the same time, it does, I think that was one that I was actually content with. You know, most races, if it doesn't go to plan or something happens, you know, it's like that, those following 2 days are like, oh, you know, what if, you know? I think this one took me 2 weeks. It was like, okay, I was content for 2 weeks, you know? So that's pretty good in the big scheme of things. So, yeah, I think it was, yeah, just getting to that milestone of obviously the miler. And that, and I kind of went into that with, you know, the adage of not having a target, more of a, it'd be nice to. And I think that's really, that really helps with your mindset. And then, you know, obviously got to that and then did a few more, you know, just to top it off.
I was there and I was on the mic and I remember looking at you and Johan and just that, and it's not a, it's the thing, isn't it, with the sport and especially the backyard as a subset of that, and it's a little subset, is that you can never tell.
No.
And on that bell curve, obviously you're going to have like Courtney DeWalter and Killian and people who are Francois and, you know, people who are right at the top, and then there's sort of the rest of us. But in that backyard format, you can never tell, and it was incredible. And I mean, talk about being exciting, man. It was so cool to have people who were perhaps disruptors in the mix. Did you feel that sense of like coming out of relatively nowhere into this mix?
Yeah, I guess, and as much as, you know, it's not a, it's definitely not an ego thing, but it definitely does, that does pump you up to be the underdog, to, you know, be that person that no one knows, and you're like, who the hell is this person, you know, like, it's pretty rewarding, especially, you know, in life and just in general, but when it comes to that in the community, because you're basically, there's so many people rally around you, you know, and they are like, holy shit, who's this dude? And then they're like, they're cheering for you, you know, like it's, that's kind of the amazing part. And they're just so willing to, you know, obviously there's, you know, how many people that start on the start line, but at the end, you know, you don't know them, but they're still cheering your name and rallying for you. So I think that's kind of that rewarding part of it is, you know, as much as it's the recognition is kind of egotistical, it's still, it's definitely a part of what we do. And it just depends on how you're going to check it at the end of the day. But yeah, I think it's a pretty cool feeling to be the underdog and come up through the ranks, you know, because you're rubbing shoulders with people that have been doing it for, you know, 10, 15 years. And you look at them at the start line and think, holy shit, you know, this is awesome because I know that they've had this much experience. So.
We're recording on Guy Fawkes.
It's not even dark yet.
No, I know.
Go figure.
The kids will be anxious to get it over and done with.
It just sparkles out.
They get you sparklers out. Hey, and I guess then, you know, 180, which is incredible. It's exciting. It's fulfilling. It's that sense of you've drawn on that resilience that you have and that set of circumstances that are, you know, they're singular, right? Then you make it into the New Zealand backyard team. How, as a reserve,
yeah,
mind you, not with the big boys and girls, but, you know, in case we need you. What was that feeling like?
Yeah, it's kind of it's the cherry on the top, isn't it? Like that sort of, and I thought there was no way. Like, I think I was sitting in the 15th or 16th spot. Oh, no, it was obviously top 15. And then I think I was in the, 16th, 17th spot or something like that. But, I thought, wow, it's a pretty rewarding thing. I never see the day that I'd never thought I'd see the day that I'd be representing New Zealand. So as much as I didn't really want to get my hopes up, I was, you know, that was pretty, pretty cool feeling to have that, you know, and obviously just the fact that it was just so many countries around the world just doing it at the same time. So, shit scared as well. It was, you know, it was some big players. So it was cool. It was real cool.
And so you get in the team and you go out to Pohinui. That was that year, right? Yeah.
Yes, yes.
At the start, I mean, you mentioned, you know, that sort of goal setting and how you go about that. What was your mentality going into this one?
I think I was pretty confident. Obviously, that was only, was that 3 or 4 months after? Or maybe 5 months after relapse. So I was pretty confident that, you know, the nutrition was dialed. And I, you know, felt like I had a pretty good base. So I didn't really feel like I needed to change too much. It was, and obviously my brother has crewed for all of them and you know, we'd improved on all of them and he'd improved and it was just, we kind of had it dialed. So I think I was a little concerned because I think that was the tail end of COVID when they were talking about reducing numbers. And I think I was real concerned because we were going to have to share crew, and not having him was a bit of a worry because, you know, we rely on those crew members. Like the stress level lowers considerably when we have them. So, but obviously it ended up that he was there. So yeah, nothing changed. We kind of just, we had the chalet set up and we were away.
Hang on, he's probably signed up thinking, oh yeah, 180Ks. A little bit longer than that, didn't it?
Mm. Yeah, certainly did. Certainly did. I think that, and that's kind of the unfortunately the selfish part of it. And I think if you're not prepared mentally, that starts coming in too. Like you think about who's out here, who's crewing you. You know, he's one crew member. It's, you know, going 46 hours, it's like, wow, you know, like, I think the relapse side of things, we came in one round. I think I had Andrew McDowell and Harsh in the tent as well. And Josh was combed out on the floor for, and we were just like, he's like, you should have woken me up. But it's like, man, come on, you're allowed one loop. So you do think about that. It's, and I think that's it plays a big part.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you, I mean, you went 300 kilometers.
Yeah.
That, you know, I mean, just about not, but peer pressure. It was a hell peer pressure.
I remember because Rebecca and Lily was, so my wife, who's on the committee with us, you know, was out there supporting you and, or, you know, cheering you on. And Lily went out and I was getting all these text reports and like you threatened violence at one stage, didn't you? Like if you if you force me to do this,
I'm going
to
come out swinging.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know where that came from, but I think it's,
probably being up for 2 days.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. The sleep deprivation, you know, and the big scheme of things, I think, got to me a little bit. But I like a super stoked that I did get peer pressure, to be honest, at the end of the day. That I think, you know, it was nice to round that number up. So yeah, I was thankful in the end.
If you hadn't have had to go to work the next day, which you did.
Mm.
Would you have gone longer? And if your brother had, and this is an honest question, if you hadn't had it playing on your mind that your brother was there and he has to work as well because he's self-employed as well as you are, would you have gone longer?
I think it's, and obviously we've witnessed this, and obviously Big's just gone, you know, like it's, if those things start creeping into your mind, it seeks any little weakness it possibly can to stop you from carrying on. Like it's a fight between the body and the mind, right? So I think, you know, towards that end it was, yes, I was sore, but obviously my mind was, you know, making that soreness greater because it wanted me to stop. But also too, yeah, just thinking about work, thinking about, you know, my brother, and even to the point where, like, Sean, you know, like he's out there as well. So it's hard to say at the end of the day. I think that the key is if you go full selfish mode and go, I don't really care about anything else other than me running loops, and it is what it is. These people can deal with it. Well, then I think you'd be far stronger, you know. But it's just natural for you know, for us to start thinking about others, you know. So, yeah, maybe.
I actually think, and this isn't to cast shade on the backyard, but that's a strength. Actually having that empathy for other people is a real
strength. And you know, that's 46 hours of your life that you, I mean, that was incredible, man. Like, that's
an incredible achievement. And that's one part of your life. And the next day, I mean, Have you had to cash in a warranty on the job that you did for the people? Like, you were up a ladder. What were you doing the next day?
I can't remember. It's plastering someone's outdoor fire. Probably, I don't know. Yeah, I can't quite remember what I was doing, but I know I was definitely up on a ladder somewhere, but yeah, probably. It'll come back to bite me in the ass, I think.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, but that's the thing, right? Like,
yeah,
you hold both those truths. Like, you're here, you're wanting to get, you know, you and it's winnowed down. You and Sam Harvey are now working together to go as far as you can.
Yeah,
and it was hitherto for both of you, wasn't it? It was unknown territory for both of you.
Exactly. Yeah.
And seeing how far you could go, and that thing of like, yeah, you've got a business that you run. Your brother's got a business that you run. You've got April. You've got Maddox. You know, like there's other things outside of that.
Yeah, we've got life going on around you while you're being stupid running around in loops. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a hard one, especially and obviously in later life when you're definitely got a lot more going on.
But also being good at it. Like there's being an enthusiastic amateur, you know, whatever. But then there's actually realizing that you could go for that brass ring. When did that start to enter your head?
I think it wasn't until, like, it seemed like it was a click of the finger, and there was only a click of the fingers, and it was only four or five of us left, you know, and I'm thinking, what the hell just happened? You know, like it's because there were some big names in that team, and I thought, well, you know, I thought, wow, this is pretty cool. But I think, yeah, when it got down to Johan and us three, four, I think it was four or five laps, maybe, I think, loops, that really kind of like, you know, and Johan and I discussed it, and we were like, man, we don't really want to go back into the next night, but it was kind of like, well, who's going to push on? And he'd had some huge stomach problems, and I don't think he had more than an ice block for, you know, last 20 loops or something. So he was pretty much on the verge of having enough. So, and I felt reasonably good. So I was like, well, maybe just keep pushing on. I think we'd sort of had that conversation with Sam, saying, "Hey, look, man, like you deserve it, man. Like you've done the hard yards, you've put this effort in." So I think it was more of a conversation that a realization that I was like, "Well, we're not. I don't see myself going to Tennessee." And it's probably the same position of thinking about the others and how much it's going to cost and those sort of things come. And I kind of maybe talked myself out a little bit, but yeah. And obviously Sam looks so strong, you know, like it's, you never know what that joke is thinking. So it was, yeah, but it was pretty cool. You know, like it's having someone like him, you can see he's starting to think, oh shit, what's going on here, you know? So, but yeah, in some ways I think I ended up talking myself out a little bit. And then that's when obviously the mind goes, oh yeah, here's something I can work on to make this guy stop.
You are, you know, you've pushed him further than anyone else here in Aotearoa.
Mm.
You went, you know, for those laps, just the two of you, what is that like? What is, you know, being in that, I don't know, the atmosphere of Sam when he's in that moment? What is that like?
Some pretty interesting conversations. I think knowing Sam now, knowing, you know, how much he's grown, I personally think Sam was trying to find himself, you know, like as well, you know, like trying to Yeah, he's just such a maniac, you know, and he's quite clearly admits it to anyone. So I think, yeah, I don't know. It's pretty crazy, especially when you're in the going into the dark again another night and but you know, the conversations probably go pretty deep, you know, you're talking about your motivations, what drive you, and so yeah, it's a pretty awesome thing.
It's certainly, you know, as I said, not many people have been able to go that distance with them, so it's a you've got a perspective that certainly neither of us have.
Yeah, exactly. Till obviously now he's doubled that and had some more weirder conversations.
That's true. So then you've come off that, people are starting to go, wow, okay, this guy. Then you go to Tarawera, and again, you probably weren't on the list of many people as, you know,
no
you probably went in there a bit of an outsider as well. I mean, we were talking about you, obviously, because you Riverhead royalty, but, you know, but probably you were a bit of an underdog there as well.
Yeah, and I guess so. It's, I probably surprised myself again, you know, like it's wasn't the best lead up, but I don't know. It was pretty awesome. You know, I was aiming for a sub 20. That was my goal. So I went into it thinking, yeah, I'll be happy with going sub 20. That would, and I think that was the first mile, obviously out of the backyard where, you know, it's a huge, you know, it's a huge difference. You know, when you know, backyard's obviously just about being consistent, not being fast. It's just about being super consistent, staying on top of everything. But then obviously when I did the satellite, I was supposed to do Taupo 100 and that would have been my first race. And I basically kind of said to myself, I want to find out what I was capable of in a race situation, you know, and put myself in a situation where I probably will DNF, but push my limits to at a higher threshold, higher pace. And obviously didn't do that because I did the satellite. So it was a huge unknown going into that.
And you train differently?
Yeah. I think I did a lot more speed work, a lot more intervals, and I think in a way it was a saving grace that we didn't have the extrovert, but it also played in our strengths that we went in circles too, you know. They were two big ones, but it was, you know, you kind of already knew that you had that in your bag of tricks, you know.
But come on. I mean, there's one thing to be lined up at the – you know, the Riverhead relapse where there was probably, I can't remember, 50, 60 people. There's another thing to be lined up at the New Zealand team where, yep, you've got a higher quality, you know, you've got some big guns there. But it's 20 people. And then we were there. Again, we were on that start line with you. We sent you guys off. There was 500 of you.
Yeah.
That's a huge field for a 100-miler. And obviously, again, we're thinking about the bell curve, but this is an international race. Post-lockdown, post-restriction. Mm. And, yep, sure, it has changed, but it's still 100 miles. It's still through the trails at Whakarei, whatever, you know. And you send it. What was that like?
It was pretty cool. You know, it's obviously I had the confidence of Murray and his wife, Kelly, crewing me, so I knew that Murray would do anything to make sure that I got through those aid stations pretty quickly. So I, you know, hugely confident at downhill, hugely confident that I could save a lot of time. And I kind of looked back at the 100K I did and looked at how much time I wasted in those aid stations, and I knew I probably wasn't at the time that confident on going that distance at a you know, higher threshold or higher pace, I knew that I could make up time on the downhills and through the aid stations, and that's kind of where I pushed to make sure that happened. But yeah, it did feel like it kind of came together, you know. And yeah, it was a pretty amazing
feeling, you know.
It did. It felt really good from the start. I felt like I pushed a lot harder than I wanted to, but I just kind of ran with it and sort of rolled with the punches and said, okay, this is the new normal. I've changed my heart rate now. It's not 145, it's 155. It's all good. And then basically hit the top of that Okutana climb and then just hit the downhill and then passed a whole lot of people coming down there and then started feeling really good. And just tried to stay as much as I could super consistent.
It's always a mark of someone who's having a savage race. And this is no shade on Murray. He's not a slouch, right? Muzz is no slouch. And he turned up at the finish line. We're like, what are you doing here? You were pacing Scott. He's like, he kicked me off the back. Like you chewed your pacer up and spat him out.
Yeah, like we'd had some long discussions prior to that, and it was he'd kind of pretty much admitted to me that, you know, this is going to happen. It's just a matter of time. But you know, like I said to him at the beginning, it wasn't a matter of whether you could stick with me or not. It was just the fact that it was you. You know, and I was, I think on that second loop, I think I went in to the village and I was feeling it at that point. But, you know, knowing that I could have Murray, and I think his probably excitement tired himself out quicker than he thought to, you know.
He does get excited, yeah. Hey?
So, and I've had a comment from another person too. I think Louis said, yeah, I think he might have, you know, he might have DNF'd himself because he was he was just a little bit too excited. But
he outstoked himself.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's but yeah, no, it was pretty awesome just to have him there for that time anyway.
So, I mean, and again, huge field. Tarawera, the 100 mile, it's a banner event. It's storied. And, you know, you're racing Zach Miller, Simon Cochrane, there's a whole bunch of other people. Lucy Bartholomew's in the mix, you know. And it was a sprint finish.
Oh, yeah, that was...
Louis Schindler, I mean, holy moly.
Yeah, and I think too, like, obviously I probably did about 50K with Simon. And then when Murray dropped, I ended up doing that section from the out and back to Blue Lake with Louis, you know. And that was awesome, you know, like, because yeah, he's a powerhouse, you know. So and I actually left him at Blue Lake and he basically just caught me sort of at Redwoods, and he sandbagged me a little bit. He told me he didn't have much left in the tank, but he certainly did. But yeah. Yeah, it was cool. It was cool to run with those guys and to finish the way we did. You know, it was you know, bittersweet, but just to see how much that, you know, and the experienced players, you know, so to see that and you know, draw down on that in the future, it's pretty awesome.
I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? Like to be viewed in that way as a target by Simon Cochrane.
Oh,
you know, like, yeah. You have made Simon Cochrane put a target on your back. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And and the thing is, he was hurting just as much as I did. You know, we were both hurting. So, and I think he was even saying, I think when we went out for that, first 50K loop, he's like, shit, we're doing a pretty smoking pace for a 100 mile. And I was like, yeah, we are kind of, but we kind of just chugged along, and I knew he was hurting, and But yeah, I think you just drew down on that experience, and to have Kyrie Paisley at the end, you know, like seeing those guys. I think it was the first time I come around and we hit that grass patch before the village. I there's something in the back of my mind, knew someone was going to catch me on that grass section because it just sucked every little bit of energy out of you. Sure enough, I think I just entered the grass, and I heard Carl, just the top of his voice, you know. So
was he talking to Simon or was he?
Yeah, he was just basically top of his voice. He was just saying, stay on me, stay on me, at the top of his voice. And I was just like, oh, shit, here you go. And I tried to increase the pace a little bit, but it was nothing like their 320 pace or whatever they did.
347 for their last kilometre. So you had two, I mean, Simon Cochrane's gone on to become the world record holder in the Ultraman. You know, they both have both elite triathletes.
Yeah.
Carl Reed, and they were sucking in the big ones. But between fourth and sixth, where you eventually ended up, what was there, 2 minutes?
No, there wasn't even that. I think it was a minute and a half, probably, yeah, a little bit less. That was, yeah, it was pretty crazy. It was 20-something seconds between Simon and I. And then, yeah, Louis was, yeah, probably a minute and a half, something like that in front of us.
Yeah, amazing, amazing.
It was one of the best, I mean, you know, been on a fair few finish lines now, it was one of the best things I've ever seen. Just, you know, and even though Simon and Carl got you, they seemed like they were hurting a lot more than you. You know, like they really.
Yeah,
you
know. They definitely pushed, you know. Like, yeah. I think, like Simon said a few times now, if it had been any less than. Oh, what was it? Less than 2 minutes or more than 2 minutes, he wasn't going to push. So, and I think it was like a minute 58 or something. So, you know, it was 2 seconds out of maybe holding him off, but it was, yeah. They definitely were hurting, but it was just magical to see them to push, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then, of course, that, you know, tells you on again.
Yeah.
You make the list for UTMB. I mean, elite entry.
Yeah.
UTMB.
Yeah. I mean, looking back to you of, what, 2-3 years ago, what would you have thought then?
Oh, could never have imagined it at the end of the day, you know. At 41 years of age, you know, like thinking, you standing on that start line in the top 300, you know, at that with some pretty serious players, you know. So yeah, never could imagine it. Yeah, I think it was only, you know, we all watch YouTube, we all watch the, you know, the YouTubers that they've done UTMB and filmed it, and I think I've sat there, I don't know how many times watching it, even with Aunt April, and it was a pipe dream. It was a one day maybe, you know. And that would be, we'll just go there and see what happens. But I think, yeah. And I didn't even know that elite, second chance elite list even existed till, I think Andrew McDowell sent me sent it through in the group chat and said, what's this? You know, like, I'm like, what's this? You know, like, so, yeah, it was a painstaking few months watching that list, you know, and the races that, hoping that it wasn't going to be bumped off, but no, not quite. But the refresh button got pretty worn out.
Got hammered. I mean, you had a decision to make, didn't you? Because you, as we've talked about, you have a life. You're not a pro runner. You know, that's all you do. You run a business. You got a family. You got other considerations. So, what was the process?
Well, the first thing was, it's like, well, you know, April is hugely supportive of what I do. So it was, you know, when I told her, she's like, oh, you got to go. And I'm like, well, yeah, it's, you know, life's not that cheap these days. So how's this going to happen? You know, like it's, and it was like the first port of call was like, I'm not going unless, you know, I can raise the money to go by, you know, by any means. So that was the first port of call, and I thought, oh, you know, there's no real way even to raise that sort of money to go over there, you know, and it, hugely selfish too, you know. That was another thing, you know, looking at it, you know, once again, our sport, it's hugely selfish, and it's not about anyone else. You're doing it to fulfill your own dreams and hobby, right? So, yeah. But yeah, once again, I call him my manager, Murray Taylor. He was on it. He had the spreadsheets out. He was the number one supporter to try to make it happen, you know. So yeah, the plans sort of came into motion, and it eventuated, and it was hugely. I think, you know, the first person to come on board was a person that he went and bought a beard off, you know, like I don't know how he got into those conversations, but it just happened that they were trail runners and they were two a family owned business, and they said, oh, we love supporting this sort of stuff, you know, like we love the story, we love what it's about. So, you know, they were the first person to put some money forward, and it was just like, oh wow, this is actually gonna, you know, this might be possible. Mm. You know, so, and then it just went from there, you know, like I was hugely hesitant to put like the give a little in there, and because of the fact it's you know, it's a lot of money, and it is my dream, it's not anyone else's, but it was out of necessity in some ways, because so many people actually wanted to give me money to go, you know, whether it be $2 or $1,000, it was pretty humbling to kind of get that support. And yeah, it sort of, yeah, paved the way to make it actually happen.
I remember standing in the car park with you at Riverhead. I was waiting to pick up Lola. She was doing a run and you just finished. And this is the thing. It's yep, cool story. You've got to give a little cool story. You're on the elite list. You are fitting training in around being an engaged parent, husband, and owner of a small business. And you're not like, it's not like you've got 30 employees, like, yeah. You know, like, and you were out at like, was it like 6 or 7 o'clock on a Sunday night, having just done your third consecutive, like, you know, big day because you've been working all week. And you announced that you finally, well, not finally, but you picked up some sponsors, and I thought, like, finally, there's actually some justice in the world. You know, like, that was the overarching feeling. I just remember feeling like, thank God, you know, like, that you actually get some support.
Yeah.
How was that feeling? Like, you know, you go from, like, giving it a nudge at the backyard to doing the 300 to suddenly you're off to UTMB on an elite ticket, and as hard as that was as a sponsored athlete.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. Like, to, you know, it's to have a business behind you, and not just any business. Like, obviously, had a lot of support financially, and some pretty cool, you know, smaller businesses that supported me. But to have a big brand company that actually, you know, they've supported the likes of Dougal Allen and all those guys, you know, like, so. It was pretty. That was hugely humbling. And I kind of it's, you get definitely have the imposter syndrome where you just think, wow, you know. And then, as much as it's great, you kind of sit back after a day or so, realize it's like, wow, this is actually quite a bit of pressure, you know. But they've been huge. Like Southern Approach, have been huge. Like a big distributor down in Christchurch for some big brands, and they're just kind of real down to earth people, and they were actually one of the first that actually even want to listen to the story, you know. And I think I flicked them an email about, you know, what I was doing and what I wanted to hope to achieve, and that I was nobody and just, you know, this is my dream. And they're like, cool, we're on board, you know, like, so, you know, and they're sending me thousands of dollars worth of gear and I didn't even have any expectations even from the beginning. So like, wow, this is pretty cool. You know, pretty surreal. So they've been hugely supportive and can't thank them enough. So
how was it? I mean, what was the process like of even sort of getting on the plane and getting to Chamonix, knowing that you were going to be looking at this monumental undertaking that you worked, you and your family have worked really hard to get to?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I was lucky enough once again that my brother came with me. He put his business on stop as well and just was like, because I think he didn't crew me at Tarawera, and I think he was in talks with Murray at the time and he was actually about to come down. I think I was on the last 50k loop and Murray was talking to him and he was like, oh, I'm in the car, you know, because he's like, oh, I can't miss this, you know. So he, as soon as he knew, he's like, oh, I'm coming. And actually one of his mates that we've both known for years, he came as well. He was actually probably the one that convinced Josh to go, you know. And so I was lucky enough to have that, which gave me huge confidence, especially going over there and not knowing what to sort of what I was in for. But yeah, it's pretty surreal.
Surreal? I mean, you get picked up by, like, sorry, spoiler alert. You go over there, you're the guy standing at the top of Gucci with a bucket hat, and then you get picked up to run for Team Innovate.
Yeah. Yeah, they were hugely supportive, you know. That's, you know, coming, you know, they didn't know me from RSO, but the fact that I was, yeah, over there, little old New Zealand, they loved it, you know, like they, and once again, they loved the story and loved how I got there and the support that I'd had. And I think that the fact that I kind of went to the lengths of explaining, you know, this is not my money. This is a lot of people's money that have made this happen for me. They were like, well, yeah, we love that, you know, like we want to get in behind you too, you know. So, and obviously Southern are the distributors of Innovate. So yeah, they were like, well, here's a team jersey, you know, or here's a team shirt. We'd love to have you on board. And there were some pretty badass team players in that squad too. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah. So then the race itself comes around. It's this thing you've been looking for. And again, like Matt said, spoiler alert, it didn't work out the way
not
that you dreamed.
Not quite.
But just, you know, take us through it. What happened?
Yeah, I guess, I don't like making excuses, but, you know, like it's, I went over there and a little, you know, I had some niggles, as we all do, but fully prepared to work through that. But it was pretty apparent when I got over there that even just, I don't know whether it was something I picked up or not, but I believe it was the altitude. I believe even just coming from, you know,
the heights of Riverhead.
Zero.
Hang on.
Even minus, to be honest, is most places.
I obviously live in Riverhead. I'm at minus 7 meters below sea level right now.
Yeah. Somehow we're below water. But yeah, even just Chamonix, obviously just at 1,000 meters already. And I think I went out on the Monday. I got there. Left New Zealand, it's on Saturday, got there on this midday Sunday, went out on the Monday and kind of realized, oh shit, this is not going to be easy. But I thought, oh, I'll be all right. We've got a few more days, to try and make this happen. So just took it real easy, but felt super fatigued. But once again, like it's, like any of them, you can't, you just, roll the punches, right? It's a problem-solving game. So just did it. And, man, that start line is something else, eh? It's managed because Elite One has 100 in it, obviously all the pros and all the big names and the celebrities. They enter through the front, and then Elite Twos, there's 200 in that field. And you sort of enter in from a separate corral. But somehow we got pushed with the guy that I was with. I got pushed right up. So probably, I don't know, seven or eight, nine rows back from the front next to Courtney. And yeah, who else, you know? Like, so you were forced to go at the start without, you know, you were going to get trampled if you didn't go, you know. So I think it was, you know, 4 minute pace off the start line, and some of those guys were doing faster than that. So managed to dial back, but yeah, the heart rate was pretty high at that stage, and I knew it was going to probably pay the price, but just try to stick with it. It was relatively hot. I think I got there, the guys that were there previous weeks, it was up to, you know, high 30s, 40 degrees. And then I think on we arrived, it was snowing. So, but that got hotter gradually, or better weather during the week. So it was something like, I think it was like 20, 25 degrees on the start line at 6 o'clock at night. So it's pretty warm. But yeah, that starts pretty something, you know, like just the streets are lined and it's actually pretty hard to take in, to be honest. Like, it's you just the amount of people and yelling and but managed to get out of town and try and dial it back a little bit. But yeah.
And was your day, I mean, was it one of those days where it's good until it's not, or did you know after that hecker start, you know, and you'd settle down, how were you feeling?
Actually wasn't feeling too bad. Had 30k mark and both hamstrings cramped up, and that kind of gave me a bit of a awakening. I thought, shit, this might be over already, but managed to walk that off and felt pretty good. I think I got to Kumuya in the 80k mark, and I noticed I knew the heart rate had started plummeting and thought I was on top of my nutrition and stuff, but it definitely was. It was good until it wasn't. But I spent a bit of time with that. It's probably more than I wanted to. And then noticed it real bad from about 100k. That's when I started having breathing difficulties and real bad fatigue, and no matter how much nutrition I took on, it wasn't coming right. So, that last 40k was pretty rough.
So was the decision, you know, we've been in DNF situations, and sometimes it's a hard decision, sometimes it's not. How was it for you?
It was a battle, because I think obviously none of us wanted DNF, but I also too hadn't gone over with the thought of, you know, what if too. So I thought, you know, yeah, it was pretty emotional at points. Quite a lot of pity parties. I think leading the last sort of 4 or 5K leading into Trient, where I decided that was it. And I think I did message my brother at the point, and I said, you know, and I basically told him at the beginning, you know, like, you make sure I leave these aid stations no matter what, unless I've got a bone sticking out, that's we're going, you know. So, and I'd messaged him, and I said, I'm going to pull that train. And he's like, we'll just see what happens and get there. The amount of thoughts that were going through my mind at that point was pretty brutal. I think at some point I even was wondering how I was going to pay everyone back, and Yeah, yeah, huge. I felt the weight of expectation, even though it wasn't there, but that really did play on me, you know.
You said earlier that, you know, it was my dream. Well, you, by doing what you did and opening it up and, you know, being so public about it, you made it all of our dream, actually. Mm-hmm. So, and it didn't work out, but we all know that, you know. Mm-hmm. We've all been there. We've all done that. We know that you went over there and tried your guts out, and you carried us. So,
yeah.
You know, I hope that weight didn't bring pressure on you, because it wasn't, we were all lifting you.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's always in that moment where you obviously get pretty down and on yourself and stuff like that. But, the overwhelming support afterwards was, it just blew my mind, you know. So just the fact of, yeah, like you say, I never thought of how much inspiration or, you know, yeah, that sort of people drew from what I did, you know. Like, it's, I don't consider myself anything special, so it was pretty humbling to get that sort of support and those messages of support.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, again, not casting any shade on you, but he was like someone who was one of us. Mm. It was,
yeah.
And you'd risen to these heights. We all kind of, like, you know, like I said, came along.
I still am one of us, you know.
You are.
And that's what makes it all the more special.
Yeah.
You know, it's a remarkable, remarkable journey that you've been on and you're still on. So what's next?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like sort of going back on that, like that, I guess looking at that too afterwards, it was like, man, it became a little bit, it's like going forward, it's like, man, if you can, even if it's just one person, you can, you know, there's a lot of people said, we didn't pay for you to race this, we paid for you to start it, you know. And that's where the people were like, and a lot of people did. They said, well, I'm never going to get there in my lifetime, you know. Mm. So if you can do it, well, then I'm all for it, you know. Like, we want to live through you and stuff like that, and you motivate us to do, you know, whether it be smaller things or bigger things. That was pretty awesome. So yeah, it took me a while. It's taken me, what is now, it's probably 10 weeks. So definitely knocked me for six. It's taken a bit to kind of get over it.
Hey, Scott, just out of interest, because you were running for the Innovate team and a bunch of professional athletes, right?
Yep.
Tell me, who out of the Innovate team, who made it the farthest?
Yeah, well, my brother made the mistake of telling me that, I think, at Kumoya, saying that was the last one left in the...
You were the last one out of a team. So, and all of those other athletes are professionals, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, yeah. A few of them are. Yeah, I think Innovate team's made up of
any
of
other,
similar
any
people.
Other tradies, you know? Any other tradies in the team?
Probably not.
Yeah.
Probably not.
This is the, and I guess that's the thing, isn't it? You take that sense of, and having run a ton with you, man, like, and I remember running in the dark with you in Riverhead, we were checking the Riverhead Rampage course, and it was so good. But in my head, I was just thinking, oh shit, this dude's just never going to get tired. Like, I'm tired and he's not. And we've got our, you know, it's incredible. Yeah, like, yeah. There's the both things exist at the same time, and it doesn't make it any less fun. You built different, but that's the thing. You went over there, you're a one man band from Helensville, you know, you had to go to work the next day after you got the assist. You put on the Innovate jersey and you're the person who other people drop, they reprioritize, they kind of think, oh, well, this isn't my year. But that's the thing, isn't it? You it meant more for you.
Yeah, it did. I think,
or it meant different, not more. Yeah. Sorry, not to kind of,
I know what you're saying, but it's, I think one of the things I've taken from it is, well, it's probably even before I went over there, and this is the selfish part of it. It's like, man, I'm 40 years old or 41 years old.
Shut up, dude.
I've got this, you know, but hey, look, it's.
Oh, boy.
I'm not 20. I'm 40, you know, in the 40s. It's, you kind of owe it to yourself, you know, if you get that wind of opportunity. And I guess you look back at it, I think maybe this is something that I've been searching for my whole life, you know, like, so to, that's, you know, that's where you kind of got to be selfish in a way, you know, as much as it's not, but it is, it's, you kind of owe it to yourself to see what you are, what your potential is, you know? So I kind of had that in there, and it's like, well, you know, I'm going to see what I can do. You know, I wish I had done this 20 years ago, but this is what I'm working with. So let's do it.
Do you though? Because this is the thing that I wonder, and having just gone into a space where, you know, like I and every single human being who became interested in ultramarathon running around our vintage then jumped into Tarawera 100K, and there was no miler at the time, and suffered varying degrees of tragedy and woe. Wouldn't you like to almost, if there was a, between 25 and 35, if any men entered it, do you reckon there should be an automatic 5-year deferral? Because wouldn't it go better? Like, if you're thinking about you at 25 or you at 30 versus you at,
yeah,
you know, 41.
Yeah, I think if you put it in the context of the backyard, you'd definitely want that deferral, right? Mentally.
Yeah.
So I guess it follows through, right? So yeah, as much as you say it probably would, you'd probably get back to the, you know, if you went back and started when you're 20, you'd be like, oh, no, I'm going to go back to where I'm 40, you know, because I've got so much more to draw down on and so much more in life that I, you know, that fills the cup, that actually provides the motivation and energy to do this.
What's next? Did we ask?
Northburn. I think we're going to lock and load Northburn. I've got another, obviously, somewhere along the lines, so they've basically got a 2-year qualification for UTMB. So it means, yeah, I've got 10 months to prepare rather than 3. So I want to try and plan this pretty rigorously and a little bit more calculated. And yeah, so in the first port of call, big race will be Northburn. To try and, just to try and simulate some of the brutal UTMB.
There's basically no simulation at Riverhead.
Not quite.
You're going to have to drag one of those mats that we pulled out of the forest after that backyard. You're going to have to strop one of those 16-ton digger mats that we put out.
Yeah, for a week.
For a week.
Yeah, for a week. Yeah, the UTMB was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, like in comparison. So it definitely it owes some respect. Obviously, I think, yeah, going there the first time, it's a little bit naive thinking you can probably race it. You know, there's probably the elite, the few that could do it, but man.
But then there's actually not. Yeah. Because if you think about, like, and I know, well, the elite women do pretty well, but like if you think about the big stud North American men, so the European dudes do okay. You think about, like, I think it was Jim Walmsley, that's the first time a North American man's won it. I think previously Zach Miller was maybe top 3, Mike Foote, but a whole lot of DNFs.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's a 40% DNF rate pretty much every year, so it's pretty nice. You can't comprehend the climbs, like 2-hour climbs of just, yeah, it's pretty pretty relentless. But so yeah, Northburn's on the cards. Maybe another race, maybe UTA, and then the reality of, you know, going over and not just going to complete it, going to compete, to race, whether it be top 100 or top 50 or top 10, you're going to have to go sort of 4 or 5 weeks earlier, which is going to be a huge sacrifice. But I think it owes that respect to try and acclimatise and get used to the altitude. So, yeah, it'll be a huge 10 months in front of us to try and make that work.
My dude, it's what a journey. Like, what a journey. What a journey.
And a huge journey. Yeah.
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 Look, Scotty, you know, I can hear the crackers going off in the background and you've probably got to go put the boy to bed, but we're going to ask you the same question we ask every person who comes on Dirt Church Radio. Scotty, what's been your greatest run ever?
Yeah, I think I'm definitely in search of still the greatest run ever. But
greatest run to date.
As much as UTMB was a DNF, but there's parts of that race. So there's the, and I think I posted this on my story, in Notre Dame, Dulla Gorge, there's a section that you go through there, and I think it's about at the 40k-ish mark. And you climb, starting one of the bigger climbs, and you're going up pretty much a rock face, you know. And this is dark, you know, like, and you can hear this noise from, I don't know, it seems like 20K out, and you're just like, what the hell is that noise, you know? So, but you finally get to it, and it is so many humans that they got cowbells, flares, like chainsaws with no bars on it, revving at the top of it, you know, and just yelling at the top of their voice, you know, like, and you're just like, what the hell's going on, you know, like, and I think, you're going into that, you're starting to climb and they're yelling your name, they're yelling for you, you know, to push. And they literally did jump out on the course and actually pushed you up the hill. So I think, and then you get past and it's complete dead, you know, realistic, it's complete dead silence once you leave there, and it's because you're deafened by the noise. But I think it took me a couple of weeks to actually go, yeah, shit, that actually did happen. And then seeing the footage, and it's like, I think at this stage, that's, you know, might be the whole race, but it's definitely a highlight. And and another point of it too is just the amount of high fives I gave to little kids around that race too, you know. I even think I got a too slow high five, which crushed me a little bit. I thought, you little bastard.
Yeah. Come back next year and waste them.
Yeah, this clothesline.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, just kids in their parents' arms and the high fiving and stuff. So yeah, there's definitely not the whole race, but it was definitely parts of it that were pretty amazing. So yeah, that's probably what I'm working with at the moment.
Amazing. Hey. Thank you so much for being so generous with your time. I think you've set a new record for we've taken you well deep, you know.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, boys.
So, you know, and thank you for taking us on this journey that you have these last couple of years, you know. And we look forward to being there with you for more.
Yeah, no, I love bringing everyone with me.
Brilliant. Thank you, mate.
So good, Scotty. Thank you.
Awesome. Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Some fantastic, fantastic insights there. Brilliant. I mean, that went to places that I wasn't expecting, and I really, really, really appreciate it. I will note, it's the first time in quite a few weeks that we haven't had an animal encounter story.
No, I can't think of one with Scott.
Yeah.
He is an animal, though, and I just think about...
He is. He's a legend.
You know, I regaled you with that story of us pulling those pellets out after the backyard, and I just wanted to stop.
Yeah.
And there was no sign that this man was... You know, he is stoked when he gets there.
as when he stops, and it's just absolutely incredible. And I can't wait.
I think we should all get. I also thought during that conversation we need to get Muzzer as a beast.
Yeah,
t-shirts made up. Is that what you said? Something like that.
Anyway. He is a beast, and he's a lot of energy. Is our Murray?
He is. Yeah.
Look, thanks, Scotty, and thank you all very much for you too for tuning in. We're on social media at Dirt Church Radio. You can email us at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com. You can find us on all the podcast platforms, like and follow if you fancy, and you can download direct from the website, which is dirtchurchradio.com.
Don't forget to write in with your greatest run ever. It doesn't have to be that time you're caught in a weather bomb at a race. It might just be some other fun adventure, or, you know, I love how people just interpret it the way they do, way they want. We'd love to hear from you. Have a read of them on the website, then send it into us, dirtchurchradio@gmail.com.
Thanks to our sponsors, Scott Running, Further Faster, Currens and CLE. Thank you to our Patreon patrons and Wild Things. Stay tuned for our show in 2 weeks when we have another great guest lined up.
Hey, Corne. Hey, Corne. Thanks, Rigby.